next case is 98-16-23, disciplinary counsel in the Columbiana County Bar Association versus John Network.
Those who knew him in his practice, and I'm one of them, knew about the problems. We knew about all first thing that they could have noticed, if they had really taken the time to talk to him, as I did when I was even along the law library, was his genuine concern for the less advantaged in society. He was very concerned with the underdog. He was concerned with the poor. He always, that's what he wanted to do in his life. He wanted to represent the underdog. And he always felt that he was an underdog and he wanted to represent those types of people.
The problem is that looking at all the allegations, that seems to be the very first step. He had to take the money out of the deficit for services, and therefore actually really harmed by the
way. We saw the worst example, but not the best example of his conduct. I've known him to take on criminal cases, and we have a county in which defendant's verdicts are very rare, and he took on a couple of felony cases and went in and fought tooth and nail and ended up winning a couple of felony cases. When he was engaged and when he was prepared and when he was not under the influence of drugs, he was a fighter, grappler, and so forth, to be recognized. And I've seen that. One of the attorneys in the other cases that I compared this case with, if you look at a lot of those cases, you find a legacy lawyer, you find someone who's maybe from a family lawyer, someone in a bigger firm, a large firm, unlike Mr. Nedwick. Mr. Nedwick was the first in his family to achieve any type of professional degree, and it was a matter of pride to him that he had become an attorney. He was in the, at least he could have been, I feel, in the best John Grisham sense, street lawyer.
Before you end, I'd like to, you talked understandably about your client, but as you know, suspension from the practice, particularly disbarment, is designed to protect the public from lawyers who are harmful, economically harmful, usually to citizens. What could you tell us about this case that could assure us that an indefinite suspension would not be risky for this court to order here versus a disbarment view of his past history? And I guess he's been recovering since December 1997, is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. In these types of cases, we find, and you're correct, that the goal of the disciplinary process is to protect the public. Certainly, an indefinite suspension would do that. At some point, Mr. Nedwick is going to come back to this court and he's going to say, look, I've paid my debt, I've gotten clean, I've gotten sober, I'm ready to commit to practicing law, and I'm ready to serve the public. Now, if you indefinitely suspend him, he will have that opportunity to come to you with this word, with this comment, and make this request. If he's disbarred, he'll never have that opportunity. Until that time, the public is being protected against such acts or failures to act as Mr. Nedwick has committed in the past. I ask the court to please judge Mr. Nedwick's case with the knowledge that he doesn't come from a world of privilege and means that many of these offenders came from.
Well, just so you know, we do disbar lawyers who come from big firms, who come from, you know, the kinds of situations that you are describing. Frankly, it doesn't matter to me that somebody practices law in a storefront or in the top floor of office tower. It doesn't really make any difference.
It doesn't make a difference to the court, Your Honor, but maybe I would suggest that some of the mitigation avenues I've known Bob for years, and he's a good attorney and a good guy. This is an aberration. I don't see what he'd rather do anything like this. John really didn't have that. John started
partly because he had quite a record of, I mean, he hasn't had a really clean record, has he? I mean,
he started out in the practice of law with an active addiction.
Yeah. So he would have that kind of testimony, I guess, about it.
Right. So we were never really able to. In addition, those that are advantaged have more opportunities for rehabilitation than those who are not.
What's this rehabilitation now? I know this is a lot outside the record, but in these discipline cases, sometimes we ask for the current status of rehabilitation.
Well, he's made at least three attempts. One of them was in the late 80s. He went into a hospital to quote unquote dry out, I guess.
Well, that's in the record. I mean, from December 1997 until today, what's his situation?
Well, I will suggest to the court that he's in the best drug rehabilitation center the person can be in, namely the Ohio Corrections System. I've heard people say that they believe that
their success rate isn't real high. I mean, their success rate is not real high.
Well, in terms of a person in Mr. Dentwood's situation,
in a controlled setting,
and talking to his substance abuse counselor, Mr. Thrack, and hearing his testimony at the hearing, I suggest that maybe it takes that kind of a drop to rock bottom from somebody in a professional position to really take the reins of this situation. And he also testified, and I believe it's true, that substance abuse is a disease characterized by relapse. Now, he's made three, at least, unsuccessful attempts in the past to get free of this addiction and get back on his feet. And I would suggest to the court that's part of the course. Some people never make it. At this point, we really don't know what's going to happen to him after he gets out of prison. But the onus that he is given an indefinite suspension would be on him to come to the court and show you, here I am, I've done the work, and I have this documentation to prove it. And I would ask that he be given that chance. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Brown.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Lori Brown, counsel for the Lawyer Disciplinary Council. With me today is Mark Hudson, counsel for Coney and County Bar Association, and Mr. Hudson will be sure part of the time. Mr. Nett's case overall was an extremely difficult case, and I will backtrack a little bit to the beginning of Mr. Nett's case, which contradicts some of what Mr. Killer just told you. When disciplinary counsel first started investigating this case, it was in late 95, early 1996. And in fact, we held off filing complaints against Mr. Nemec until he attempted treatment through all that in Louisiana. It is not a case where he hasn't had chance. I think Mr. Killer would lead you to believe that there has been no chance at rehabilitation. And that is absolutely not true. Regardless of his needs, and I believe that his father testified at hearing, Mr. Netwick's father, that they paid, their family paid, for Mr. Netwick to go to a treatment center in Louisiana. It was a 60-day program. And I think if you look at Mr. Netwick's deposition, he was kicked out of that program after 59 days for in his own words because he was a smart ass. So I don't know particularly what happened in Louisiana, but I do know he was asked to leave prior to the end of the program. And also at his deposition, he testified that he was high within a half hour of getting back into East Liverpool after that treatment program. I don't think that Mr. Netwick's history is strong enough in terms of being non-addicted. It's a strong enough history to give up any basis to accept the risk for a granted him an indefinite suspension. The risk is simply too great. In terms of the actual misconduct committed by Mr. Netwick, I think if you look at each individual isolated incidents. There were 19 counts in Columbia County case and 9 counts in disciplinary counsel case. And none of them in and of itself is a huge case of misconduct. But the combination of the nature of the misconduct and the amount of misconduct in an attorney who's only been admitted since 1993, I think if you look at that in combination with his unsuccessful rehabilitation, you can only come to one conclusion, and that is that he should be disbarred. Probably the most telling point for asking for disbarment rather than mitigation in comparison to the other cases cited in Mr. Tibbler's brief, there is no history of non-addictive practice of logic. There would be no witnesses. Should he have had the history that, for example, Mr. Sanborn had, Mr. Steele had, those types of attorneys who had maybe 10 years of non-addictive practice and good quality representation of various clients, you would have witnesses who could come in and give testimony as to your character. But in this case, as Justice Moyer mentioned, Mr. Nessus was an addict when he went to law school. He was an addict when he was admitted to the bar. And the last thing that we want to do is punish him for being an addict, and Mr. Tibbler is exactly correct that we're completely looking at the risk factor here, and this is not an instance of punishment. With regard to Mr. Surratt's testimony that the drug addiction counselor that testified at the hearing, he also testified that Mr. Nessus only came to about 60% of the meetings that were organized for him when he was in the treatment in lieu of addiction program. So that was a chance that he had after he went to Louisiana with the OPEC program. So he had two chances right in a row when he realized that he's going to jail for a felony, that he's going to get felony suspended, he might lose his license forever, and he still only goes 60% of the time.
Let me ask you, Ms. Brown, as you know, indefinite suspension, the respondent has to apply to get back, to get the license, get her license returned. So we have a chance to review the conduct of the respondent during this period of time that they're suspended before allowing them to return. Are we saying, if we disbar here, is the board saying that we are so certain that based upon Network's past, so certainly he is not going to be successful in recovery, that we don't think it's worth even raising that hope for him? Is that the sort of thing?
That's absolutely the question that after I went to the High State Penitentiary and took his deposition and induction with these two counsels, that was a Friday. And from when I returned to Columbus and talked to Mr. Copeland and Mr. Copeland and I had extended conversations, that is exactly the most difficult question. Is that what we're saying? But I think that when you look at Mr. Nettler's history in combination with the risk, his history being failure at different rehabilitation programs, and even if, for example, he was clean for 5 years, and I don't know what the answer is. There is no 100%. He may be a model recovery. He may never use drugs again once he's released. He's going to be released in November. He may never use drugs again. He may use drugs again right away. I don't know. And that's where it's such a tough call. Do we have the wherewithal to say you don't give another chance? And that's why this is a very difficult case. I'll turn it over to Mr. Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Hudson.
My name is Mark Hudson, and I'm here on behalf of the Co-Relay for this case, Columbia County Bar Association. Today I'm appearing before this court, and I'm requesting that this court affirm or concur with the recommendation already made by the board, and that being for the severe recommendation of permanent disbarment. I'm not doing that because I think that Attorney Network needs punished. That's already been taken care of. I'm doing that because, to echo the words just mentioned by Chief Justice Moyer, our duty as attorneys and judges is to protect the public. In this case, protect the public from one of our own. This court has said that its decisions in disciplinary matters should show consistency, but yet each case should be judged on its own merits. We should judge things on a case-by-case basis. In his brief, this respondent has cited two premises, culpability and motivation. He lists compulsion in four different levels, the highest level being greed, and the third level being compulsion related to addiction. He then states that the term network problems are related to his addiction. He equates severity with the level of monetary damage done to a client. In support of these two premises, he cites four cases, all four of which are distinguishable. Just to take two, Geico, which also wrote on the accounting and seal, are distinguishable because the misconduct of the attorneys, while egregious, did not directly affect the client. Mr. Geico stole money from his law firm. He did not take money from the client. Mr. Steele, although he may have taken money, he may have committed tax fraud, this was not a crime committed against a specific client or a group of clients. Two other cases, the Hallows case, the Sanborn case, substance abuse cases. Again, the difference or distinguishing factor is if we're looking at substance abuse, we have a record that these two gentlemen were successful in their attempt. Attorney Network has had three attempts. The first in 1984, he remained sober according to his own deposition testimony for 100 days. The second being in 1996 when he spent 59 out of 60 days in rehab and was kicked out. And the third being while he was incarcerated in the Ohio State Penitentiary. Those are the three attempts. We don't know if he's been successful. There's one other flaw with the argument involving compulsion and motivation, and that is we must consider the people that John Edwards represents. Mr. Tiller stated that he sought out to help these people. I would submit to this court that if he sought out to help them, he certainly did not. We're not talking about great sums of money because, in Mr. Tiller's words, we're talking about a street life. He didn't have the wherewithal. He didn't have the client base to steal or to take thousands and thousands of dollars. But his client, to Robin Wiggins, $572 paid for a divorce, including the filing fee of a lot of money to not get a divorce. To another gentleman, Larry Cunningham, $250 paid for the reinstatement of his driving privileges. There's a lot of money. He was under condition of treatment of conviction on the county, a terms of that treatment contract, he admittedly got high. I think we have to weigh the qualities that he may possess versus his misconduct. And I think we owe it to the public to protect them. There's been a lot of talk, I believe, in the last few years about the public loss of confidence and trust in our profession. To regain that, we have to show the public at large that we respect ourselves. We have to hold ourselves to high ethical standards. If a person or an attorney such as John Nefler doesn't, certainly we give him a chance. We've done that. Before our bar association was involved in this case, disciplinary counsel, in all respect, held off to let him go through the Ohio Lawyers Assistance Program. Admittedly, he didn't make it. Came back and got high before the program was open. So I think that this is a weighing process. You have to weigh his conduct versus the need to protect the public. As I said, I've been troubled by the responses he's made to questions. He looks at other attorneys and says, gee, I could be just like you. I could be making all that money. Wrong, I submit, that's not what the practice of law is supposed to be about. We're supposed to serve the public. We're supposed to help the public. I don't feel that John Nefler is capable of doing that, even if he is rehabilitated. For that reason, on behalf of the local bar association, I am requesting that John F. Edwards be permanently disbarred. There's no further questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Hudson. Mr. Kibler, you saved 2 minutes of your time.
Your Honor, I believe you have the entire picture. Okay. Say no more, and I'll trust you to make sure.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. The next case is 90.